All right, we're back with the final session of F-Sharp Comp. This is session 15. The knowledge has been flowing forth from some marvelous MVPs, from some wonderful people like Tomas, among many around the world. We've had people in Japan. We've had someone in an airport in Australia.
That is
We've had people in the UK at MSR Research. We've had people here in the United States in Detroit. We've sort of been everywhere. It seems like F-Sharp is really a global community. So I want to toss it over to you folks to talk more about F-Sharp, why it's exciting, why you should take a look at it, why it's something that's interesting. So we'll start with Tomas, and then we'll go here.
You want to hear why is F-Sharp interesting?
Do you see his face?
Dangerous question.
Well, you've been watching the whole thing.
Yes, I have.
You've been actually playing with guns in your studio.
It's true. There's been some violence in there with some Nerf guns. It's true.
But if you were not playing with guns, you would have seen why F-Sharp is really good.
No, there were some really cool things. Like, for me, the thing that I like about F-Sharp is how it's very structured as far as modeling your data first and then writing the functions to work on your model. In C-Sharp, you kind of do them both at the same time, or maybe even in any object-oriented language. You're always doing them at the same time, which sometimes it feels like you lose a little fidelity, maybe.
Yeah, that's what's sort of hidden behind a functional first phrase, really. Because the slogan sort of says, well, functional first is how you design things, but equally you're not sort of limited.
Right.
When you want to do some crazy efficient optimization that .NET lets you do, you can do it.
So you work for Microsoft. Tell us what you do, my friend.
Yeah, so I'm David Stevens. I'm the program manager on the Visual F-Sharp team. Within the .NET team, and I also work on some other things in the .NET team. So I've been on the Visual F-Sharp team for about 6 months now, and it's a ton of fun. I actually, F-Sharp was the first language I learned in college that wasn't object-oriented. It kind of sparked off an interest of mine in functional programming and made me realize just the variety of programming languages that are out there. So it's a real honor to get to work on it every day.
I think we should be very clear because there is a very fine distinction between what Visual F-Sharp is and what F-Sharp is, F-Sharp.org to speak. Will you speak a little bit to what that difference is and how you can sort of think about that?
Yeah, totally. So the simple way is to think of whenever you hear Visual, think Microsoft. And that's the rough approximation. So the comparison maybe is C++. So C++ is a language that has many implementers of different C++ compilers, and C++ is sort of this open language that isn't really tied to any one particular company. But Microsoft makes the Visual C++ compiler. And so if you're talking about, you know, Microsoft's specific contribution to C++, you talk about Visual C++. So F-Sharp is the same way. F-Sharp is, you know, defined in a spec that's an open standard, and theoretically anyone could come along and make a new F-Sharp compiler, but today there really is only one F-Sharp compiler. And so that's the distinction. So then Microsoft also contributes tooling in Visual Studio, and that's also open source. But that's not really F-Sharp. That's the tooling around F-Sharp.
So F-Sharp is just this thing, like C++, that sort of lives independently on its own. There's a spec. If you wanted to go out there and write your own compiler, you can. If you wanted to make changes to the language, you could fork and make changes to the language. Let's say you wanted to implement some Haskell stuff into F-Sharp, you could totally do that. But when we're talking about Visual F-Sharp, we're talking about Microsoft's implementation of that particular spec.
Exactly.
And it just so happens to be the only one right now.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Exactly.
Well, I would say that there's a sort of maybe even a finer distinction.
Love it. Let's
because
hear
if you look at the F-Sharp compiler itself, it's got a lot of contributions from people in Xamarin, in the open source community. So the compiler itself isn't sort of closely tied to Microsoft. Mm-hmm. There's a sort of one version of the repo in the Microsoft/Visual F-Sharp, which is where that's what sort of ships with Visual Studio. So that's what Microsoft does. But then there's also a version under F-Sharp/F-Sharp, which is where lots of the open source extensions to it live. So that's what gets bundled with Mono. So I'd say there's like two repositories that have the same,
they're
have
cousins.
The same heritage.
Yeah. They're cousins.
But, and ideally, we are sort of working towards making them closer. Mm-hmm. But the bit that sort of comes with Visual F-Sharp, I think, is really the sort of Visual Studio tooling.
I see.
And that, and also the fact that it just comes with Visual Studio, which is.
But you don't have to. I mean, we saw there was the Xamarin sort of IDE that does F Sharp. We also saw the was it called Monide or Ironide?
Ironide.
That is the sort of Visual Studio Code stuff where you could do all that stuff with F Sharp as well as the interactive stuff that I saw. So
and we have seen Emacs too.
Oh, you've done. There's Emacs.
Stuff. Oh, that's what Chris Holt was using.
Oh my goodness, I totally missed that. Okay, so let's get to some of the questions that have been asked, sort of from our viewers. Question from Pitar: relation between F Sharp compiler and the Roslyn C Sharp compiler, refactoring and tool support. So they're different things.
They are different things.
Why don't you speak to that a little bit?
Totally. So. I think part of why there's always lots of questions about Roslyn, I think some of it is that the word Roslyn gets used to refer to a lot of things. So Roslyn can mean the actual C# and Visual Basic compilers that were released in July as part of Visual Studio 2015 and are on the Roslyn code base on repo on GitHub. Those are about C# and Visual Basic. Then the Visual F# compiler is a separate compiler. So some people ask, like, oh, what would it mean to Roslynize, turn it into a verb, Roslynize F#? Well, at that level, it doesn't really make any sense. It could, but they're separate. So in terms of reusing, so then there's another part of Roslyn. Actually, there's several. One is this sort of layer that's able to analyze code, and you can create these little code analyzers that plug into the C# and VB compilers. Great little custom squiggles that'll appear. So for instance, on your team, if you wanted to enforce some rule and have little squiggles pop up, you could write that kind of thing. And today there's not a way for F# to plug into those, that specific mechanism, but you can use the F# compiler service to analyze and get that same kind of intelligence about an F# program. And then there's a third thing called the Roslyn Workspaces layer, which is an API that sits sort of on top of all of that C# and VB-specific stuff that talks to editors. It'll talk to the Visual Studio editor, it can talk to the VS Code editor. And so TypeScript came along and used that API to provide awesome editor features in Visual Studio and VS Code. And we've recently started looking at using that API for F# also. And so that's sort of the first place only recently where the F# compiler and our team have started using things that have the word Roslyn in them, if that makes sense.
I see. So the workspace is more, because obviously Roslyn is a compiler, mm-hmm. right? And then what it does is it gives you parse trees. But you have your own F# compiler that gives you the parse trees that you can take them and analyze them. Is that correct? Similar things?
Yeah, and then there's this API that knows about a project and can surface information about a progress to an editor.
I see.
And can talk in terms of code points in an editor and can make an IntelliSense window pop up in a certain place and those sort of things. So F# can reuse that non-language specific part to express those editor features and then reuse a bunch of that code. Because currently there's duplication with how F#'s editor that ships in Visual Studio today. And there's duplication between that and how C# does it. So we're looking to unify those.
That's awesome. So if you use the F# compiler, can you use it as a service?
Yeah. So there was this project. I think the name of it started as Foslin, but then turned into the.
I never called it a Foslin. It was just a joke I made.
Yeah. You make a joke, and everyone's calling it Foslin.
Like, every time I come to Microsoft, I make some joke, and then people take me seriously.
Yeah, but then it became, I think, it was always called the F# compiler service, which, similar in spirit to how Roslyn worked, you can call these higher-level APIs and get information from the compiler at a semantic level about an F# program.
And there's another interesting thing about this project, because like when you look at Roslyn in C# world, the big deal was that they were rewriting the whole compiler from C++ to C# so that it runs on .NET. But the F# compiler was actually written in F# from the very, well, not from the first version, that would be a bit hard.
Yeah, because it didn't exist.
But it was written in F# from the very early days. So you could actually access the ASTs and all the structures for a really long time. And what the F# compiler service project did was that, well, actually, sometimes people say, like, I created the project, But really what I did is that I just write like one page of documentation, how to do it. And and then sort of there was a lot of work recently on polishing the API, making it nicer. So nowadays it's actually a really cool project because you can get the AST with like the type information to use it for checking, but you can also embed the F# compiler in your application or use it. You can embed the F# interactive as well, and it provides all the sort of services for like symbol resolution if you want to implement editor features. And there's been lots of cool development happening together with the Visual F# Power Tools, which is a Visual Studio plugin done by the community that leverages the compiler service to provide more additional tooling.
One of the things I've always wanted to see, and if you're out there and you want to write this, please do. I've always wanted to see sort of a graphical flow of the functions and the data, like in a diagram, right? Because when it comes down to it, you literally start by calling a function or several, and I wanted to see what that flow looked like, you know, because my sense is that it would go something like out and then some and then in, and then you'd be able to see the data as it flows. I've always wanted to do an analysis of a program that way.
Yeah.
And so I mean, I bet you could do that with the compiler services.
I bet you could do that.
I know. I bet we could do that, or you could do that, dear community, F# community. Okay, let's go to the next question from Andre. He's saying, is there a simplified process for setting up the F# compiler?
Well, he actually says it required 100,500 steps.
That's pretty specific step, yeah.
I bet he counted it.
Yeah. I know even just like a month ago, there was an effort, I think Don kicked it off, to make it easier to build the GitHub repo. And so right now you can go run a single script just called build, and it'll build the compiler, and there's flags to choose if you want to do a debug or release build. So I think that may have gotten a lot simpler since the last time you looked at it. But raise an issue on the GitHub if it's still giving you fits.
Is it take a long time to build it? Is it like a go get a drink after you go build?
It takes a few minutes.
I think it takes longer when you do it for the first time because there's some bootstrapping phase.
Got
but
it.
Then you can set it up so that it runs reasonably okay.
Okay. All right. Next question from Jack. Is there any effort to get Microsoft to dog food F# as a primary use language internally? I think there's some good answers to this.
I think we can turn this question around a bit because, I've been here for a week and I actually visited one of the teams inside Microsoft to do an F# training for a team that's using F#, but I think I'm not allowed to say anything more. So,
and this is not the first time. I've been to one of your trainings here to Microsoft folks.
Yeah.
Look, in my opinion, if you want to be a good programmer, you should know object-oriented, but you should know a functional language and also a dynamic language just to be well-rounded. You know what I'm saying? As a programmer.
More the merrier. Yeah. Logic languages are fun too. There's a lot of languages out there.
No. Yes. That was a prologue joke for those of you out there.
It was a prologue joke. There's some wisdom in there, but I haven't found it yet. I'll get there someday.
But I guess we can turn the question into sort of what are some of the interesting teams inside that are using F#?
Yeah, totally. So I know you are. Yeah, so there's the Visual F# team is absolutely using F#. So there are a whole bunch of teams So there are a bunch in MSR to start with. The quantum computing group in Microsoft Research has a really cool language called Liquid that's sort of an extension of F# to do quantum computing simulations on a classic computer, which is some really heady stuff. Like at least for me, I don't know that much about quantum computing. And the Hello World sample they have talks about Hadamard gates and things. But so that's, I think, one of my, yeah. But you know that's what Hello World is like in our quantum future, right? So that's one example. They kind of took the language and evolved with it. And there are several teams in MSR that do machine learning with F#. Every month or two I get an email from someone in MSR to go and it's some project I hadn't heard of before and go and meet them and see what they're working on and you know doing sensor fusion with Kinects and recognize people's faces and emotions and just a lot of really amazing stuff. But then outside of MSR, there's teams in Office who've looked at F#. There's teams in Windows who use it internally. One of my favorite things to hear from are people who just kind of, they don't haven't even told their team yet. They're sort of use F# because they like it, because it's interactive, and they can sort of explore .NET APIs more quickly with the interactive window, and it's just sort of quicker to play around with. So I hear about people all the time who sort of are like, hey, you know, I write these scripts internally at Microsoft, and everyone else is using C#, but I see all this value from using F#, and it's super easy for me to just try it out and then try and convince other people on my team. And then there's people in Azure also that are just kind of personally interested in F# and looking to do that. There was a library that I think got released by someone on the Azure team just last week to help make Azure Batch easier to consume from F#. So lots of these little projects springing up. Definitely, the wave of F# is slowly creeping over Microsoft, and I hear about people using it all the time.
I think it's a fractal.
Yeah,
because,
yeah, it's a fractal.
There's like this self-similarity between the whole world and Microsoft internally.
Yeah, it really
and then
is.
All the teams within Microsoft.
The gracious tentacle of F# is reaching for y'all. Just saying. Here's a good question from Carl. What is the state of F# and .NET Core? I don't know if you can answer that or
can. Oh, absolutely.
Let's do it.
I've been starting a blog post on this today, actually.
Oh. Free blog post stuff, people.
Yeah, this is. So we've been the team here has been working on .NET Core support and the Visual F# compiler for several months now.
Oh.
All on GitHub. If you go to the Visual F# repo, you go to the Core CLR branch. And that's where it all is, the actual code for it. And so the compiler runs on Windows OS 10 and Linux. And we've shown that some community libraries like Suave will run on Core CLR. And we're getting to the point now where we want more people to try it. And so I can't exactly give you a URL verbally here, but on GitHub, there's a getting started page that I'll send out in the next week or so and to get more people going. But here's the short of it. If you've used the .NET CLI tool for C# or for VB today, you can actually type .NET new, and then you say --lang f#, and that's all you need to do. That'll create an F# Hello World project on .NET Core and bring down the Core CLR compiler for F#. And you just type .NET run like you always do, and there you go. So it really is, you just say .NET new --lang f#, and that's how you get F# for Core CLR right now. So it's coming along. We still have some fairly, you know, big things on the tooling side to do, and then obviously the community needs to start making sure all these F# libraries and type providers and other things work on Core CLR, but it's well on its way.
Fantastic. All right, some more questions. I don't know if I agree with this one, maybe because I've heard of it, but the question is, why isn't F# not heard of like other languages?
I think now that people have been watching the Channel 9 stream for the whole day, then hopefully we're going to explain that that's not really the case.
Well, I mean, I think you're seeing globally. I mean, we just today we've seen people across the globe. I'm not trying to be like, wow, across the globe. No, we literally had people in Australia, we had people in Japan, we had people in Europe, we had people in the United States.
Wow, across the whole globe.
Across the whole globe, literally across the whole globe. In fact, we caught people in the morning in Japan. Faelina, I don't know what time zone she was in. We don't know, but
nobody knows.
My sense is that, I heard about F# in 2008. I looked at it. It was a really fun language. I wish I would use it more. I just haven't had the chance to because I make a lot of demoware, ladies and gentlemen, so that's why. But what do you think? Do you think F# hasn't been heard of? And if it hasn't, what are some things you guys are doing as a community, guys and gals, to get it out there?
I think in a way there's definitely something about it, but it also depends very much from like what kind of community are you coming from, because I guess if you look at like what's talked about at large Microsoft events, then F# is only just finding its way there.
Yeah.
And I think it will continue because there's some sort of unique sweet spots for F#, like data science, where Microsoft is getting really interested, and F# is pretty good fit there. Or now that with the Xamarin news, that will actually mean that F# that's been part of the core Xamarin tooling will probably get more visibility in the Android and iOS app space.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. What about you? What are you guys doing to get F-sharp out there?
Yeah, there's two things that have me really excited about more people using F-sharp in the future. One is .NET Core, providing another way for people on OS X and Linux to use F-sharp. I see comments online all the time pretty much directly saying, wow, I didn't realize F-sharp was so cool. But I'm on a Mac. And maybe they haven't heard of Mono, or they tried it and for whatever reason didn't want to keep using Mono. There's a lot of people who do use Mono to run F-sharp on OS X and Linux today, but so I'm excited for .NET Core to have another way to do that, and you know, we're going to promote the heck out of it and hopefully reach more people who are interested, who are currently using like Scala or Haskell or Clojure today, give them another language to play with in the functional space. They can use everywhere and so compared to those languages, like F-sharp is awesome, and those languages are awesome too, but like just another one for people to play with who sort of love those languages. And the second thing is, that lots of languages, even the sort of object-oriented languages that everyone's familiar with, are all adding functional features, and that functional concepts are showing up in more and more libraries throughout all corners of programming, on the server, and you've seen a lot of these examples today, actually, for microservices, functional programming has a really great story.
With the actor model in particular.
Yeah, that's a huge one. And then like React on the client side, there's sort of a functional worldview in there in a way too. So I think as more people who get familiar with these concepts, it reduces that barrier where people feel like they have this big conceptual leap to make before they feel comfortable in a functional language. And so with that leap made smaller, it makes it easier for more and more people to use F-sharp and know how to get going with it.
What do you say to the people that look at F-sharp and feel like, this is maybe more mathy, more sciencey than I'm able to handle? What do you say to those folks? I mean, because there were some things that we saw today that were clearly, like, I remember I looked at him, I'm like, okay, I see what's going on here with this state machine. Okay, I see how he's regular. But again, I mean, I had to like squint, you know, side-eye it a little bit. What do you say to the people that feel like maybe this isn't accessible to them? We'll start with you, Tomas.
Well, I think that we also had Sean Trelford showing how easy it is to get started with F-sharp. And in a way, I think lots of people find it, like myself included, when I started with F-sharp, and I'm not going to say how long ago that was. But when I started with F-sharp, I was coming from the C-sharp background, and I found it kind of hard because it's different, and then you have to like wrap your head around it a bit. One really surprising thing I find, and I'm doing F-sharp trainings, and we usually get quite mixed audience at the training.
Yeah.
We have like professional C-sharp developers who are really good at .NET, but we also had people who are maybe good at, I don't know, we've got people who are actuaries and use Excel, and they haven't done much programming before.
Right.
And in a way, they actually find it pretty easy to get started.
Because they haven't been polluted by the sort of notions.
No, I think they just sort of come to it with fresh expectations, and then you open your F-sharp interactive and start typing. Mm-hmm. And as I do it, you figure out it's actually not too hard.
No, I don't mean polluted. I mean, there's a certain way that I was taught in school where the first thing I learned, and this I am going to tell you, it was Java 1.0.
I thought it was Fortran.
No, I'm not that old.
I am
76. I use really good moisturizer, though. No, but Java 1.0, the first thing they beat into my head was object-oriented.
Yeah.
And what happened for me is the first time I learned a functional language is I felt like all these functions were just floating around and somehow they were going to escape. Or I don't know what was going to happen to them, right? It's like, where are these going to go? They belong in an object. But as soon as I freed myself from that and I thought in terms of data and functions and also partial functions, then all of a sudden things started to make a little bit more sense. But it was a little bit of a leap for me.
Yeah. No, I think it's just sort of throwing away and ignoring that fear and just start to play with it. And there's lots of fun entry points where people can go, like the C4 F-sharp dojos.
Right.
That's a really nice place where you can just, I don't know, fiddle with it for a bit, and you'll find out that it's actually not too hard.
Awesome.
I think one of the reasons I love functional programming is that it's easier for me to think about. Like, I remember when I was learning how to learn, the first language I learned in school was Java, and I remember seeing X equals X plus 1 for the first time. And my head exploded. It was like, what? What's that mean? You know, and so, oh, okay, it's assignment. And then once I realized it was assignment and not math, I was like, oh no, order matters, and I have to worry how things get crossed when you pass something as an argument to a function, and it just, like, it's, whoa, that's really complex. And then when I learned about functional programming and I learned that x equals x plus 1 returns false, it was like, oh, great, okay, I'm at home again, you know? Yeah. Sanity has returned to the world. So I think it can actually be a simpler model. And you bring up Excel. You know, Excel is the most used functional programming language in the world.
And I will tell you that Felina, I did interview her in London, where she literally goes through monadic behavior inside of Excel.
It's in there.
It's hilariously good.
Yeah. So it can actually, you know, I think many orders of magnitude, there are more users of Excel than any other language, any like object-oriented language on Earth. So it really, I think, would be more natural for a lot of people if they just kind of heard of it, you know. So
two more things before we wrap up. This is from Ryan. What's your favorite F-sharp language feature now that we're talking about F-sharp? Or what feature would you most like to see in the language? We'll start with you, and then we'll go over to you, Tomas.
My favorite feature, I think by far, is forward pipe, which is kind of like a little thing, but it's just so nice to be able to read the flow of a program in that way, and you just kind of write these functions, you know, they don't have to put them in a class, and it just kind of reads exactly in the order that it executes, and it's the first thing I do when I go in a language that doesn't have it, is just define forward pipe. And a feature I really like to see, this is kind of a random one, but I'd love to see the ability to track side effects of things in some way that doesn't require a lot of annotation. This is a space, like functional languages have some kind of sophisticated approaches to, but I don't know if it's possible. It would be really great to just be able to hover over a function in a tooltip, say, you know, this is going to touch a database and do some logging or something like that. I don't know if that's possible. Like, I'm just saying it'd be kind of cool because it helps me kind of understand code. But
love it.
Yeah, so my favorite F-sharp feature is, well, type providers, of course. Yeah. How can you say something
else? Of course!
No, but I do think there's a, like, first of all, type providers, they do exist in one other language, which is Idris, but that's more of a...
Oh my goodness.
Idris does have type providers.
I did not know that.
But I think that's about the only other language that has them. Type providers really sort of solve very important issue on the working with data in a heterogeneous environment kind of thing. And they just make you think about problems differently. So if you look at the JSON type provider, then it gives you the flexibility or the simplicity of dynamic languages, but with full checking, with even more checking than, say, statically typed languages.
I mean, it changes the way you do REST effectively.
I
mean, it changes it completely.
And then there's sort of more on top of that, which I think we haven't really even sort of fully explored yet, which is when you look at, for example, the World Bank type provider, where you get like all your countries and all your indicators about them into your editor. There's like one project that I've been playing with, which is to make something like this available to journalists so that when they do a report on carbon emissions around the world, they can actually access the data live and have that embedded in their report and allow everyone to sort of see how it was done and modify it. So I think for me, type providers aren't really just like a neat language feature, but it's more about even like bringing the programming experience that you have with type providers to the hands of people who work with data more generally.
Awesome. So to finish up, closing statements, anything you want to say about F-sharp, where we're headed with F-sharp, or where the viewers could be headed, we'll start with you and then we'll go to Tomas.
Yeah, so I think the big change that's coming this year is .NET Core, and so really it's a community effort. Like, we operate entirely on GitHub, and we love contributions and pointing out issues you're having. We're super responsive if you reach out to us on Twitter or anywhere else. So join in and let us know what you run into, and I'm really optimistic for how this can make F-sharp even better than it is today.
Well, maybe this is the fact that I'm in the U.S. and my American mindset is switching on.
Nice.
But I think that the key thing is just do cool things.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the things we've seen with F-sharp in this during the day were actually projects that people like you in the audience started.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really love about the F-sharp community is that it's very supportive. So when you start something, it's relatively easy to find people who will want to help you. And that was the case with lots of the open source projects we talked about. That was the case with the F-sharp Foundation itself. And it's also on the meta level the case with this conference when we came up with the idea, and it was actually surprisingly easy to find all the people to join us today.
It was a lot. It was not like just a few people, and the content was some was light, some was fairly deep, and it was all very diverse.
So I think, yeah, the key message is if you love F-sharp, play with it and do something interesting, and then come to the next F-sharp conf that we'll hopefully have here in the future, and you can be talking there.
Absolutely. Well, just to wrap up, thanks so much for spending some time with us. Again, this has been the first edition of the F-Sharp Comp. Thanks so much for Tomas and all the other community members that literally put this all together. We just sort of stayed here and made sure it went without a hitch, and it did. Thanks so much for watching, and hopefully we'll catch you at the next F-Sharp Comp. Take care. This is Seth.
And thanks to Seth and the whole Channel 9 team for streaming us and making sure this worked.
Awesome. All right. Well, we will catch you next time. Take care. Be safe.